Welcome, everybody, back to the Pretentious Movie Sheet Podcast.
What kind of opening is that, Brian?
Welcome. I don't know. I was trying to think of, like, what the fuck do I say? Like, I feel like we had a bit of a...
What's up, guys?
What's up? What's poppin', fam squad? We got Christian, we got myself, and we also have a special guest with us this week.
We do. We have a very special guest. Good friend of mine, and I'm just gonna gas you up just so you can be really uncomfortable once you start talking. No, he's an amazing writer, director, person. I love him. It's Matthew Talbot, everybody.
Hello. Thank you very much for that very warm welcome.
Absolutely. A gentleman of a film background, of course, as you said, writer, director, has a project that you're working on, the night she was followed home.
Do you want me to talk about it?
Yeah, sure. Give us your spiel.
Okay. So I had an idea for this film on a plane ride to Colorado. August going into our sophomore year. So August, what would that be? 2019? Yeah. August 2019. At the Philadelphia Airport, I bought this tiny little notepad and it had like an alien skating on it because I was just sitting in the airport and I was like, oh wait, I have an idea for a script right now. And I like sketched it out.
And when we landed, I like heard.
Yeah, I know. Well, this is the Pretentious Movie Sheet. So
he's gonna write an A24 movie now.
So I have always tried to like challenge myself and like do different genres, and one that I like really haven't like fully done yet is like horror. So I had this idea of, like, what if we made a horror movie about like a legitimate fear of friends of mine, and that is getting followed home. So I wrote this script like when I landed and in the next days after that, and then it was just going to be a story about a girl getting followed home, but then I don't know why I kept going, and now there's a whole other element of, there's like a supernatural twist almost to it, and halfway through it you kind of are like, oh shit, like what's going on here? But basically it tells the story of Logan and her roommate Haley go to a party with Haley's friend Ben and his roommate Clark, and Logan leaves the party because she starts to feel weird like she drank too much. And she goes followed home. And then from that point on, a whole bunch of things happen. And everything you've seen so far comes back and everything gets flipped on its head. But yeah, that's the general premise of it. It'll once all is said and done, it'll probably be like 25, 35 minutes long.
That sounds fantastic. And looking at this poster, real quick, I just gotta say, like, I can already feel the like the energy and like the vibe just from seeing this poster, and like it fits perfectly with what you were describing there. Just kind of like that. I don't know. I'm trying to think of what it reminds me of, but like one of those classic like classic horror movies.
I was gonna say I really love the vibe that the poster throws off as well. It reminds me of, I think I know what you're going for, Brian. Like that classic like Friday the 13th like cartoon poster that you just get that full feeling of the movie,
right?
Like the silhouette of Jason, yeah. Right?
Absolutely. So it's so the whole so it's going to be shot in well it's going to be black and white, and the whole vibe or the references I was making to it are like 50s 60s horror
movie. That's why I was
like the Beagle almost, which is why the title is so long. Like it's like, you know, invasion of the body snatchers, or like I don't know, like it felt like every horror movie in that time was like a really long title. And then also the poster is a direct reference to American Werewolf in London.
Oh, very nice.
That's one of my favorite horror movies of all time.
Yeah.
Truly love that film. One of the best sets of special effects, I think only rivaled by, I know this is Brian's favorite horror movie is The Thing. But yeah.
Both incredible.
They're both wonderful films.
Love it.
I really love the title now. I didn't know the significance of it. Like it, I do miss that and reminisce about that sometimes, since I've become such a 50s horror fanatic over the duration of this podcast. These almost like James Joyce, like long-winded sentences that become the like almost the whole plot of the film, right? I really enjoy exactly. that. I miss that.
The house say, on Haunted Hill. Like
yeah.
Yeah. And that like it is never the title has never changed once. Like I think the first thing I wrote down was The Night She Was Followed Home, and I knew I wanted to make it feel like a 50s 60s horror movie, and it just hasn't changed since then.
I'm totally getting that vibe, and looking to some of the promotional material that you've produced, I love the Hitchcock references. With like the silhouette, it's really does speak to that like time period of like those like kind of classical horror vibes.
Yeah, thank you. My incredibly talented one of my really good friends, and she's also running the social media, came to me and was like, the other day we restarted our Seed and Spark for donations, and she came to me and she's like, hey, what if we do only pick like cute pictures of Alfred Hitchcock? And I was like, Emmy, you have a crush on Alfred Hitchcock? And she was like, he's adorable. And I was like, all right, go for it.
He is adorable. He's got the penguin shape to him.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a stretched out Danny DeVito.
I was gonna say he should definitely do like he should have been Penguin, honestly.
Alfred Hitchcock is a very interesting character. When I first saw the movie with Anthony Hopkins, right? When he put on all the weight to pretty much become him. It's insane.
Hitchcock.
Yeah. He is an incredibly funny guy for some of the most dark and twisted media that he's put out there. It's incredible how funny he is, because there's stories of him going up to people and saying, hi, I'm Hitch, hold the cock, which I think is hysterical. And it's one of the greatest ways to introduce yourself. He's a really interesting guy. And I was taking a lot of film classes this year, and one of the things we dove deep on was Hitchcock. There's such a humor to all of his horror films as well. Like The Birds, there's the cute scene of the birds in the back swaying with them when they turn. Do you find yourself like, because Matt, you're a really funny guy. Like I've known you personally. That's something that Brian might not know, or some of our fans might not know. Yeah. But do you ever find yourself like kind of going back and forth on the genre, or maybe sprinkling in a little humor? Is the subject matter just not fit that?
Oh no. So like it's a reference to 50s and 60s horror, but it's as like new and like, it's not like stuck in that era. So you like the story itself is like a thriller, it's horror, but I cannot write anything without adding comedy to it.
I was gonna say, like, I've just, seen most of your films, they're pretty funny. Yeah.
Thank you. Like, there's really, I find everything funny. I like laugh throughout most of my days, and like, yeah. So the conversations between, especially Ben and Clark, they are like, there is a little comedy to it. I try to make it funny at times. Like, I don't want anyone to like laugh out loud during this, but like, if at some point you exhale out of your nose, like, that's a nice relief, you know, like, you're not like tense the entire time.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I do like to add comedy to like anything I do.
I think that also helps with the scares even more. You get the audience a little more relaxed and a little more, you know, they kind of sit down and get antiquated to the environment.
Take their guard down.
Yeah, exactly.
Disarm them a bit. Christian and I had met through like speech, and there's like speeches that involve a lot of acting, and there's a genre that's totally dedicated to drama. And yeah, honestly, the best ones that I've found are the ones that have a good mix of like have a healthy dose of comedy to you know, pull you in. You know, you gotta let the audience in that way.
A quick sidebar story. Me and Brian, we got second place at state, right? Or third?
Third place.
Third place. We did Swiss Army Man. I just want to throw that out there.
Which part?
Throughout the whole movie, like a bunch of different scenes. It was really fun. I really enjoyed working with Brian. I got to play Daniel Radcliffe. Of course, Brian was called Dano through and through.
Did you fart on command?
I wish I could.
We did. That was the missing element. That's why we only got third. We needed the part on command.
God damn it.
But so I'm curious, because I understand that you've produced some, you know, films before. I believe Christian had mentioned a feature length one as well, correct?
Yes. Christian,
for your convenience.
Christian went to the for your convenience. In high school, my junior year summer. Basically, long story short, in high school, I would assume similar to you guys, I followed a movie account on Instagram. I followed like four movie accounts at the time on Instagram. One of them was based in like London, one of them was based in like Japan, and the third one like didn't have any like base or anything like that. And I remember I was going to an Eagles training camp, and the account posted a quote from the movie Invincible that day and was like, I'm going to Eagles training camp today. Like,
that's not from It's Always Sunny.
I know it's not from It's Always Sunny. He's like, the quote from today is from Invincible. And like, I messaged the account and I was like, oh my God, you're an Eagles fan. Like, where are you from? And he was like, oh, I'm from Williamstown, which is where I'm from. Yeah. I was like, holy shit. Like, I was like, how old are you? And he's like, oh, God, at the time, he was a year older than me. And we fell in love. No, I'm just kidding.
Catfished.
I got catfished. And this story gets so dark. No, him and I became really good friends. And he's always wanted to be a filmmaker. that's where this comes from. I remember after making films for like a year or two, I like sat him down and I was like, hey, why doesn't anyone our age make a feature-length film? And he was like, oh, you know, like there's no time, there's no money. And I was like, why don't we just treat it like we're making a really long short film? And he was like, oh, and he came back to me with a script, and then we kind of combined on it, and it turned out to be an hour and 14 minutes, and we had a premiere for it. Online, I think we sold like 20 tickets. So the people that graciously gave us the place for free were like, yeah, you should get more people to come. And then the night we had it, I think like 180 people showed up, and we were like, blown away. It was without a doubt the coolest night of my life. I remember I did a Q&A before and afterwards, and standing up there after the film ended and we got a standing ovation. And I remember just being like, yeah, like I'm totally cool going to film school and doing this for the rest of my life. Like, this is worth it.
That's outstanding. That's truly outstanding.
Thank you very much.
What was it taking that big leap and that dive into finally showing it in front of a large group of people? Was it, you know, it's weird to look back on it now. Obviously, it was a success, but do you think that would have discouraged you had it not gone as well as it did?
I don't think so, because I had the built-in excuse of him and I co-wrote it. What'd you say?
I was going to say high school film.
Yeah. Well, him and I co-wrote it, co-directed it, and we co-starred in it. And I'm not an actor. So
this guy over here.
If it turned out bad, the first thing I would have done would have been like, oh, it's because him and I aren't actors and we were in a feature-length film. So it would have been discouraging, yes. But like, it wouldn't have been the end of the road, because I would have been like, all right, let me get like legitimate actors this time and get more than one camera, you know, and get actual sound equipment. We didn't even color grade it. We had no idea what we were doing.
I remember so much of that film. It's great. Number one, I still have that poster in my room from that night.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I'm serious. I have it right next. It's going to sound so strange. It's right next to this giant Hulk Hogan poster that I got from meeting Hulk Hogan.
That's not strange. That's the coolest place that it could be.
And it's so crazy, because I remember getting it. I'm like, holy shit, this is really awesome. This is going to mean something one day. And I still believe that. And I was going to just say that, you know, seeing your progression from then, it was good then. I promise this isn't a backhanded comment from my mom, but I remember I ended up showing my mom the movie and she goes, wait, this is actually good. Like, she's like, oh, I didn't expect this from somebody in high school. No, she was thoroughly impressed.
That was like the go-to, was like a lot of people from Christian and I's high school came up to me and they were like, I didn't expect it to be as good as it was. I got to give it to you. And I was like, thank you, I think.
I talked to Brian.
Which I remember the first film I ever made, I showed it in my freshman year English class. And my teacher didn't tell anyone that it was my film. He was just showing a film. And I remember a kid in the class halfway through it said, holy shit, this sucks.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I remember sitting in the back of the room like, yeah, like I made a film. And some kid actually said, holy shit, this sucks. And for 2 years later, you know, I made the feature length film, and like the same like group of kids were kind of like, didn't know you had it in you.
Hey, success is the best revenge.
I was going to say, Brian, if you haven't seen it, I believe it's still on YouTube, right?
I actually have it pulled it up. I have it pulled up on YouTube here. So I'm going to mark that in my watch later. And I I don't mean to put you on the spot here. If you're able to talk about this, I seen the IMDb trivia that you guys got the cops called on you twice. So I was wondering if you had some stories about that.
Yeah, okay. Oh my god, what was the first time? The second time is a wild story. The first time, where was the first place? I think it was the same location twice on separate days, but the first time we were filming and the cops came and they're like, what are you guys doing here? And we were like, filming. And they were like, okay, don't. And we were like, all right. And then the second time, which was like 2 weeks later, I remember it was me, Joey, who made it, who did everything on it with me, and Cameron, who was like the cinematographer for a decent portion of it. The three of us were filming, and he had like a shoulder rig, so, and we had ski masks on. and fake guns. And the cops pull up. And I threw the gun on the ground. I threw the mask on the ground. And I look over at Joey and Cameron, and they're both facing the cops with the Joey had his mask on, and the gun was in his hand. And Cameron had this like bazooka looking thing on his shoulder.
Oh,
and
I boy. Was,
like, I like screamed at them. What the fuck are you guys doing? And they like threw the stuff on the ground. And the cops came up to us and they were like, what are you guys doing here? We were like, filming, like these are fake guns. And they were like, oh, we didn't even notice them. And he goes, yeah, a woman got shot in the head.
What?
He was like, oh, a woman got shot in the head like 30 minutes ago and like half a mile away. So you guys should go home. And we were like, oh, you don't got to say that again. And we, and
we're gone.
Really, oh my God. Can you imagine like that fucking call home? Oh my God.
I know.
Hey, mom. Like... this is a bit of a wild night here.
Mom, I'm in holding. Yeah, I got mistaken for a murderer. No, but the cops were really nice about it. They were like, go home. And we were like, out. Using the ambition I have, I was like, hey, what if you guys shined your cop lights and we got a cool shot of like the lights flashing on us? And they're like, no, we have a murder to attend to. And I was like, oh yeah.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, she's already dead.
Yeah. She's not going anywhere.
I can't imagine like hearing like from people's early work, like crazy stuff that happens on production sets is like some of my favorite like trivia within any genre, really. I was gonna say horror. My mind immediately goes to Sam Raimi with Evil Dead.
Brian, you know my affinity for that movie. I absolutely adore Evil Dead. That was sorry, I keep going on these sidebar stories, but
I
remember it was my freshman year in college. I just kept doing movie nights over at my dorm. And I kept going up to everybody. I'm like, Evil Dead, come on, you got to watch this. My friend still comes up to me today because he's like, dude, you were way too high. You hyped up this tree rape scene way too much.
Oh, God.
I think that's why I was like a little worried about you at first.
I remember with the speech team, like, it was around Halloween time. We were just hanging out and it was on demand for free. And I was like, oh yeah, let's watch this. And like, I'm pretty desensitized to stuff. Like I've been watching like Saw and stuff since I was like 10. I
got even younger for me. So yeah. I could fucking see somebody get mutilated and it wouldn't bother me.
No, like everybody was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, Jesus Christ, Brian, what are you showing us?
There's so many good stories in that.
I got into Tarantino at a very young age. And I remember the day Django Unchained came out on Blu-ray, I wasn't able to see it in the theaters. And I was like 14 at the time. And I watched it. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes. I watched it, liked it so much. I went over to my grandmother's house and watched it. And she made it through like a couple F words and was like, why would you put this on for me? And I was like, oh, I was like, I forgot about
that. I met his grandmother. She's a very sweet woman. I could absolutely see that.
Yeah. Shout out. Well, I almost accidentally took her to see The Wolf of Wall Street one time. And we were on the way to the theater to see it. And I just so happened to be like, let me look at the parents guide. And it was like, first scene, Leo snorts cocaine off of a stripper's ass. And I was like, turn the car around, please. I was like, bub, we're not going to this.
That's funny you have a Tarantino story with that. My dad wouldn't let me or wouldn't go see Hateful Eight with me.
Really?
Oh, really?
He loves Tarantino. He was just pissed off with him at the time.
Wait, for Hateful Eight?
Yeah, I'm not going to get too much into that, but I remember I was like, all right, welcome. I'm going to find my way to get to Hateful Eight. And I did. Yeah. And guess what? He went with me a month later to go see it. And guess what? He loved it. And now he watches it all the time when it fucking comes on HBO or Netflix.
Dude, gotta love
it. The story I was saying about how I met Joey on Instagram, my mom wouldn't let me meet him in person until like her or my stepdad met him first. And I remember I was like, hey, what if my stepdad and your dad take us to go see The Hateful Eight? And the four of us watched The Hateful Eight the day after Christmas. And I remember going home and my mom was like, well, is he a 40-year-old creeper? And I was like, nope. And my stepdad was like, no, he's a good kid.
That sounds like the most wholesome, like, two 14-year-olds going out on a date for the first time. My parents are going to chaperone. They're going to sit at the table over there while we're eating our fucking appetizers at Chili's.
Exactly.
But we're going to take a quick break for a second here. We're going to do a quick mid-roll. We'll be right back and we're going to hear a little bit more about some productions, some stuff that, you know, will be in the future of a young up-and-coming writer-director. So we'll be right back, guys. Stick around.
So, Christian, who's our sponsor today?
Our sponsor today is a great little place that I've been working at for a couple of years, and a great guy who also made the theme song for this podcast. Sandwich Bar is a restaurant on 33rd and Asbury. Fantastic place, right behind Treats and Treasures. They're open seasonally in the summer, but it looks like they're staying open a little longer this year. They're open 6 days a week and they're closed on Tuesdays. Remember, they're cash only. Okay.
Cash only.
Cash only, people.
Rolling up with a debit, with a little MasterCard.
It's not gonna work. Nah. You gotta make it rain there.
Yes. Hit the ATM.
Sandwich Bar is a fantastic place. I don't just say that because I work there. I love their food. One of the best places. Easily the best place in Ocean City, which is why it's won many awards. But I gotta say this. Dennis is an awesome guy. Awesome food. Go give them a call before you come in, since, you know, new COVID precautions. It's 609-741-9888. That's 3 8s at the end. Not 3 8. 3 separate 8s. So yeah, go stop by. It's got some great lobster rolls.
It's the home of amongst, the lobster roll.
Amongst everything else, it's the home of the lobster roll.
It's got slow-cooked pork, chicken cutlet sandwiches,
gluten-free options, guys.
Salads, hand-cut fries. You're getting your fries cut by some machine?
No, I gotta say,
hand-cut.
Again, they are the best fries I've ever had, and they come with a side of sriracha mayo, which is much better than cheese, and I will fight anybody who says that. You can follow them on Instagram. They're at sandwichbarocnj, which is also their website, sandwichbarocnj.com. Yeah, you guys definitely should go. They're wonderful people, great food.
Say I need a gift certificate.
Oh, they got you covered.
They got me covered. Oh, Dennis, you come through again.
Dennis, oh my God, you come through again. What can't you do? You sing, you play music, you direct movies, you cook. What can't you do, Dennis?
Absolutely. Check out Sandwich Bar, OCNJ on Instagram. Give Dennis some love. Tell him Pretentious Movie Sheet sent you.
Tell him Christian and Brian sent you.
And yeah, we love you, Dennis.
And we're back.
You know those like speakers that work with like whatever music's around and they just kind of go with whatever the beat is?
Yeah.
Took that up to the heart, whatever's playing.
I'm just gonna give it to you. What?
We were just talking about pacemakers. And
DMX
how...
hits you right in the feels, right in the heart directly.
There's like Wi-Fi capabilities to check the batteries and stuff, and like there's fear that people could like hack into them, and it's a rude sandstorm. But no, welcome back everybody. Oh boy, we're here again with Mr. Matthew Talbot.
Hello again.
We actually did leave during the break, unlike most podcasts. We're not lying.
We did restart the Zoom call.
Zoom.
But snooping a little bit on some of the promotional pages for The Night She Was Followed Home, I saw that The Shining was your favorite film.
Oh,
or,
yes.
Or is that your favorite film or favorite horror film?
That's my favorite horror, but it is also, I think it's in my top 10 favorite films. It's just, I, you know, like, this is a movie podcast. I can't really, it's a super underground and indie film. No, everything that's ever been said about The Shining has been, it's just truly a flawless movie. Like, I love it. It's one of the first horror movies my uncle ever showed me, which is another source of inspiration I have for making this film. Christian knows him.
I was going to say, uncle, you want to get into your uncle because he's an interesting kid when it comes to horror movies, especially.
Oh my God. My uncle Mike is so in love with the 80s. It's crazy. Like, I've never been in the car with him and he hasn't played like Journey. And
that, he's an older version.
That goes exactly. My mom says that. My mom met Christian like twice and was like, if Mike ever had a kid, it would be Christian. but he goes to all like the Monster Manias and like Cherry Hill. He goes to all over to these horror conventions. We call him Rain Mike sometimes because holy shit, like, He's like, we'll be watching Friday the 13th will be on. He'll be like, that's Kane Hodder. You know, he was only in Friday the 13th part 5 or whatever it is.
Me with wrestling, by the way. Everybody calls me Encyclopedia Brown.
yeah, but my Uncle Mike, I remember I was 8 and his favorite movie of all time is Friday the 13th. And I was 8 years old and he's like, what, like, I'm going to show it to you. I was like, cool. And I watched it and he's such an asshole. I love him so much. It got to the end and she's floating on the lake and he was literally like, oh, isn't this a great ending to the movie? Like, wow. Like she made it out okay. And then when Jason jumps out of the water, he actually shook me. And like, I remember I nearly shit my pants. Like, that still is one of the most horrifying experiences of my life. but yeah, like, he's such a big horror movie fan. Like, when I was writing this, I was like, I want to make something that my Uncle Mike can share on his Friday 13th discussion pages and be like, yeah, my nephew made that. Like, I wanted to make something that, like, he would really, like, you know, enjoy to watch, you know.
So
absolutely
awesome. I was gonna say Mike's more than welcome to join on this podcast. We do we actually have a hard bracket going on right now. If he wants to join in, I'm not sure if Brian is Friday 13th on that hard bracket.
Unfortunately, I don't think it made the cut. Poor Kevin Bacon's left out in the cold on this one, but we'll make it the honorary. Was that
he is such a big Kevin Bacon fan. And he lives, so it's my two uncles and they're bachelors and they're never gonna get married, they're never gonna have kids. They are party animals, and now that I'm 21, they are so excited that they can do whatever like party activities they want. And I remember watching, like, they always bust each other's balls. And my Uncle Mike, we were watching Wild Things one time. He's like, yeah, you see Kevin Bacon's junk in this. And my Uncle Dave was like, how the fuck do you remember that, dude? Like, that, like, that's approaching weird. And Mike was like, whoa, it's just, it's a fun fact.
It's a fun fact.
Funny enough, it's actually the number one piece of trivia on IMDb.
It gets bad when he knows like the timestamps, though. That's where he's pushing it.
At 1 hour and 23 minutes, you see Kevin Bacon's schmeet.
Just for a little bit, though.
Just for a little bit.
It's bad when he starts counting, like, oh, he's got about 26 ball hairs there. Not a full shave, but pretty much a trim.
So like Footloose and stuff, that's like definitely his wheelhouse and all that good stuff. he would say it's his favorite slasher.
Footloose. I will never in my life get over the fact that there is a scene in fucking Footloose where he needs to blow off some steam and he just goes and starts doing gymnastics in a warehouse. You can't write a better scene.
You ever seen The Fly?
Also, no, I've never
you seen haven't. The Fly. There's a scene, it's not a spoiler, but Jeff Goldblum, like once he starts getting his fly powers, it is a direct ripoff because he lives in a warehouse pretty much. Like almost shot for shot of Footloose. And it's so obvious that it's not Goldblum doing any of the stunts. You can pretty much see the stunt double's face. It's so funny. Yeah.
I think my favorite line to come out of the 80s is when Kevin Bacon, they're like putting gas in their car. They're cleaning the car. And Willard was like, yeah, there's no dancing in this town. And Kevin Bacon goes, jump back. It's just so perfect. And like it fits a movie so well. Like I heard it the first time and I was like, yep, that's it. If I ever get a tattoo, it might have to be jump back.
I will often say I'm getting that tattooed on my chest or something like that when I hear something amazing. So I'm glad we're on the same wavelength with that.
Absolutely. Well,
Ryan has probably a 13th tattoo on his ankle though.
I do.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Did you get it on Friday the 13th?
It was part of that Friday the 13th deal.
In other words, no.
I know that it was, well, I mean, it. I think it was the following Sunday. So, you know, not quite the same energy. Actually, in fact, the last thing I was trying to do before quarantine hit was like the day I came home and then never left again. I was trying to get a tattoo because it happened right around Friday the 13th again. Should have seen that bad omen coming. I went with my roommate. What's that? The one I was trying to get, or so I have I was looking to get a Glover, but you know that never came to fruition. So Shining is your favorite horror. What is your all time favorite movie? If I can put you on the spot like that, because I know for me I've had three that I've had hovering around for that spot for the past like 10 years, but you know like it's hard to choose your favorite child.
No, I totally have an answer.
I think I know the answer to this too.
It was Reservoir Dogs for a really long time.
That's what I was gonna go with.
Reservoir Dogs in my top five. Django Unchained was the movie that got me into movies, as I mentioned earlier. So Django Unchained, and it was my favorite movie of all time. But then I realized that along with Django Unchained, I think about it nearly every day, just the scene or something like that. And if that isn't my favorite movie of all time, I don't know what would be, but it's La La Land.
I remember when it first came out
and you went to it. You spoke so highly of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. But like at film school, when I tell people my favorite movie is La La Land, I get like shunned.
People
are like, ew, you fuck. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't.
Why isn't it Moonlight?
I'm like, I like Ryan Gosling.
Yo, Ryan Gosling.
No, but
top tier, top tier.
I love him.
Absolutely. He's like, he has such a good fucking IMDb. Like, he's in so many good movies.
Oh, dude, yep. I've been
Blade Runner 2049. Insane.
I need to see both of them. I need to see.
I told Brian, I think Blade Runner is the most beautiful film I've ever seen from a cinematography standpoint. I mean, Roger Deakins is fantastic, but I used to say like Suspiria is one of my favorite visual experiences, but Blade Runner knocked that out of the park. It is just a feast for the eyes. That's a hot take. But then again, I have a hot take with Dunkirk.
This man hates Dunkirk. Like I've never seen.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's
good. You know,
all throughout the Halloween season, I've been really popping off about this band called Dead Man's Bones, and I'm sure that listeners between the YouTube channel and I've spoken briefly on the podcast about it too,
and our playlist as well on Spotify.
Yeah, no, like it's. I've been digging so deep into Dead Man's Bones. I don't know if you're a big Halloween guy or big like horror guy in general. They do like kind of spooky songs and stuff like that. Ryan Gosling's in it. It's Ryan Gosling and like another guy, and I was like listening to them for like a week, and then I saw like, oh, Ryan Gosling's in this? What the fuck? So, a man of many talents.
You cannot. It's really crazy because Brian sent it to me, I think, before you found out it was Ryan Gosling. And I'm like, this voice sounds so familiar.
Right.
And I couldn't put my finger on it because I'm like, it has to be a singer or somebody that I know because I listen to so much music. Yeah. But I'm like, when he showed me, I was like, huh?
A little bit of La La Land for some reason. La La Land's great. One of our friends from speech, that's his favorite movie as well. And I remember watching it in the theaters. And spoiler alert for La La Land, like when they don't end up together.
Yeah.
Like I remember, like it was a group of like all guys, and we were watching it. Like, oh, you know, we'll just go see this thing. I'm like, whatever. And we got so invested at the end. We were like, that bitch, she did end up with it. I mean, you know, she's not required to be with him, but we were also like, that bitch. she forgot all about him. So you would say maybe like Tarantino? Would he be your biggest influence? Would you say?
I'm not trying to sound pretentious here, but in film school, I've
been pretentious. Who?
Like professor. Yeah. At Temple, I've been told, my scripts kind of resemble Tarantino because I am so dialogue heavy. Like the cinematographer I have for The Night She Was Followed Home, his name's Kevin Johnson. He's a good friend of mine. He's one of the most talented people I've ever seen. And I know when I was writing it, he was always going to be the cinematographer. And I purposely kind of like left out a lot of like visual descriptions because that's his thing. Like I will write the dialogue. I'll like write the plot and the action, but like, he can make something look 100 times better. So that's how I always kind of approach scripts, is that I write very, very heavily dialogue because, you know, like when you're having a conversation with someone, you're talking to them and you're not necessarily, like I've been moving my hands this entire time, but like, I don't feel the need like that, you know, I don't feel the need to like write that down.
I also went to, I'm also going to film school as well. And St. Joe's is a completely different realm. I wanted to write like Tarantino because I love dialogue heavy films. And like, this is impossible to market or sell.
Yeah.
It's pretty much Tarantino's got the market on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, Tarantino's a big influence of mine because I love his movies. I love Damien Chazelle so much, and Denis Villeneuve. I like when all the different aspects of a film can speak for themselves. Like if you watch La La Land with the sound off, it's gorgeous. If you watch it with just the sound, the performances are great. Like if you remove certain aspects from my favorite directors, like on their own, they're still incredible. So I would like to kind of like resemble that when I'm making a movie, is I just reach out to the most talented people possible, and I hope that they make me look good.
Absolutely. And that's something you speaking on, like the visual description and how to collaborate with people, kind of reminds me of something I actually recall Tarantino saying, like, you know, he's got the vision kind of, but you know, he just talks to these talented people and is like, this is what I'm looking for. And yeah, you know, they just make it happen. And you know, it's about that collaboration and being able to delegate like that. And you know, from what I've observed, like I have very like little to none experience in like filmmaking, despite the fact mm-hmm. that I'd like to review that shit. But like that's yeah, what goes into making a good director, you know?
Yeah. When I first started working on this project, I definitely felt overwhelmed because I've never really been on a set this size before. Like I remember one of our first meetings, my assistant director told me like, oh, so like we'll have a second AD and they'll handle the extras. That way the extras like will not be allowed to speak to you. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, like there are people that like are just specifically not allowed to speak to you on this set because like they're like, you need to focus on directing the actors. And I was like, wow, like anybody can talk to me at any time. But I was like, that's crazy. Like before that, like my films have just been me doing everything. And so yeah, like I felt overwhelmed when I first started working on this, but no one working on this project has looked at me like I'm the inexperienced one, because I think that has to do with the fact I'm a communications major as well. So yeah, I don't know everything about the technical aspects of film, but that's not my field. Like when we finally film this, I will be able to go to set and look at the actors and tell them exactly what I want and communicate that to them. So like I feel like that's my strong suit as a director, is like you can hear me now, I won't shut up. Like that's what I'm good at, is communicating.
No, I mean, like, you know, this is like, you know, what the stuff we're curious about. But absolutely, like, you know, that communication is like integral to like, you know, being able to delegate and being able to like, it can be so hard sometimes trying to get like a vision that you have in your head and verbalizing it. So being able to communicate that is, again, like essential for trying to create something, especially collaboratively. And on that level, that's wild about like the extras and like the, you know, being on that big of a set.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
it's crazy.
Have you ever heard of the website Masterclass? It's a, like a premium service. Yeah. They're not a sponsor, don't worry, I'm not leading into that. They my boss got it. You've met Dennis. Both of you guys have actually met Dennis. He got it because he really wanted to see the filmmaking aspects of it. And depending on who you go to, it's either tyrannical director or you get somebody like, I just know this one offhand. I forget who the other one was that he looked at, but he always said Ron Howard just talks about collaboration. He said he can't do a movie without collaboration. And that's why his movies are good.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of Ron Howard's Masterclass and he would not stop stressing that.
Yeah, funny enough, I just watched The Grinch 2 days ago, and like, you can see it too, like the costumes and the makeup in that, which both the one I think he won for makeup and got nominated for costumes, like they and the set design, it all just like really, like you can see like it's not just him shining, it's the people he's working with too. He seems like a really nice guy too.
Did he direct The Grinch?
I'm almost certain. Let me just double check, so I'm not gonna.
I mean, I've never once been like, who directed The Grinch? But I'm just like, if that's true, that's very surprising.
That surprised me, Brian. You did mention that in the post, and I was so thrown off by that because I never really thought of who directed it.
Right, and it's a Jim Carrey movie.
In all honesty, it was more reminiscent of like a Tim Burton movie than anything how it's designed.
Truly, actually, now that you mention it. I didn't even see the makeup is so like good.
Real.
Yeah. Like I didn't even realize that Jeffrey Tambor was in it.
Oh shit, is he really?
He's the mayor.
Wow.
I was crazy. Like, I definitely know this is somebody, but like, I can't put my finger on it. I was, the dad from Arrested Development. but yeah, no, like, so you had mentioned additionally, like different genres, like this was your first touch at horror and a little bit more, some more comedies. Have you done some other genres beyond those two? I know you mentioned you sprinkle a little comedy into everything.
Yeah, so let's see. This summer in quarantine, I made a thriller. Little horror. I wrote The Night She Was Followed Home before. It's called Pressy Street Revisited. And basically, my stepfather in 1986 made his version of like a slasher film on a VHS camera, and I took it from VHS and put it on my computer, and then I made the sequel to it 30 years later, like 34 36 years later, and that's definitely like the film that I've made that's gotten like the best response from it. Like people, again, like I feel like every time I release a film, a lot of people are like, did not expect this out of you, like did not know you had it in you. But yeah, that's
like on Vimeo right now.
What'd you say?
Sorry, there's a lag on this. I didn't mean to cut you off if I did. I was gonna say it sounds like everybody's setting the bar so low for you.
Yeah, I know. Which is fine. Let the bar be in hell, so that way I'm always going above that.
Hey, I mean, you know, it's from the sounds of it, you know, it'll be, you know, people are going to be expecting some big things. You know, the more they're seeing this stuff. But sorry,
we're hyping them up. We really should be playing them down.
we need to balance it out.
I will say. And I've been saying this, and I'm totally going to stick by it. Like everything I've made has been basically me with a camera. And if people like that, this film is going to be so much better than anything I've made in the past, solely because I'm making it like a real like film set with incredibly talented people. Like, one of my good friends, who's the star of it, is becoming a professional actress. Like she's working her way there. So I think after this comes out, there will be a bar and it'll be a little bit higher. But once this comes out, like thoroughly, like it'll be the best thing I made by like a really large margin.
I was going to say that, you know, since you brought it up with the bar, that was going to be one of my questions that I had in the back of my mind. What's, this is going to sound like James Lipton right here. What's next for Matthew Talbot? But what is the next step the next turning point. Not necessarily the big goals in the end, just these more appetizing little goals.
Well, for one, I just want to make this film, and it's been so fucking hard, and everyone attests to that, that is a part of it. But we originally were filming in March of 2020, a week before everything shut down.
Oh, no.
And then the country shut down. Yeah, so we didn't get to film anything in March. And then we were going to film Labor Day weekend, and Temple shut down that weekend. So we were like, that's kind of, that would be a little fucked up if like we filmed the weekend Temple shut down. And then we were going to film the 21st and 22nd, 28th and 29th. So we were going to film last weekend and the one before that. And all of Philly shut down, like Philly put restrictions in. So now we're looking to film in probably like February.
I feel so
but
bad.
Yeah, like it is what it is. I keep telling everyone, like, we're not going anywhere. We're still in college. Like, we're still in Philly, you know, like it is what it is. You can't plan for a global pandemic. It'll just make the finally seeing it so much more rewarding, because instead of something that I wrote and got a crew and made in like the span of like 3 months, it's now looking like it's going to be like the span of like two years from like start to finish. So it'll just be more rewarding. But what's next is that's my main focus, is getting this done so I don't have to think about it anymore, because I want to move on to something else. But for one of my classes, I actually finished a script earlier this morning. So I wouldn't be opposed to making that in the future, maybe my senior year. But yeah, and then other than that, just being on people's sets, I was asked to assistant direct on, I mentioned earlier, Emmy asked me to assistant direct one of her films. She asked me to co-direct another one of her films. So just things like that, like just bouncing around from project to project. I've noticed that's kind of what a lot of people do at Temple.
That's awesome. That really is. And seriously, I wish all the best to you. I hope this fucking pandemic ends. I know that's a hot take. A really controversial take, everybody. But I really
I can cut that if you want. Like, we don't need to leave that in.
I'm sitting here, I'm enjoying my Zoom class here. I can get my GPA way up. Shut the fuck up.
it's been an absolute pleasure having you, man, dude. Are you interested? Where can we find your stuff, and like where can we send everybody to go harass you and follow you and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So the film's Instagram is an acronym for The Night She Was Followed Home. So it's TNSWFH film. So yeah, it's an acronym for The Night She Was Followed Home film. And my Instagram is it's Matthew Talbot. The first A is a 4, so it's M4TTHEWTALBOT. You know, because I'm artsy, I added a number to my name. Yeah, but I think Instagram is probably the best look at like into my endeavors, because Twitter I just shit post on, so I don't ever send anyone to my Twitter.
I literally started a Twitter yesterday and nothing but shit posting has been on there. Not from me, I just
from across the
board. My Twitter is so stupid. My Twitter is just me tweeting pictures of my friends texting me telling me I tweet too much, and me talking about the Eagles, and that's about it.
I don't know too much about football, but I'll tell you what. Nick Foles is looking, well, maybe not right now, but like, man, I wish they held on to him. I wish they held on to him. And like, I don't know. Compared to
Nick Foles is going to go down as the most interesting athlete, I think, ever, because In 2013, he was a part of the Eagles and went on one of the most ridiculous runs a quarterback has ever had. He tied the record for most touchdown passes in a game. He threw 27 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. Like, he went on just an absurd run. Then he went to 2 different teams and just sucked. And then he came back to the Eagles and fucking lit on fire and won a Super Bowl. Like, I don't know what it is. Like Carson Wentz's ceiling is much higher than Nick Foles's, but Nick Foles just knows how to win in Philly. It's so weird.
Absolutely. Not like in that spirit, like seeing I don't know if you seen the video where he goes up, that one fan was climbing up on a ladder and just nailing in a sign for Full Street or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
I love Philly wins. I really do. And I like,
yeah,
I'm not the biggest sports guy other than my wrestling. If anybody even knows, but I seldom ever mention that, but I do love when Philly wins because they are the craziest group. And I mean this in the most endearing way. They're the craziest group of assholes on this side of the asylum. I love them.
I don't even know how to describe it. After not getting political, but after the election happened, me and my roommates went to like the city hall area to like see what was happening. And it was just like it was just fuckery on both sides. Like, people were dancing. Philly Elmo was there. It's a dude it's like a six foot five guy who has a very, very awful Elmo costume, and he just dances at like public events. Like, you just
isn't gritty, there's no Philly Elmo. This,
what'd you say?
Philly Elmo.
Gritty.
Yeah,
Philly Elmo. Oh yeah, Gritty.
Love Gritty.
I don't know. I think the show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia really does encapture Philly. Like, it's just wild.
I would agree.
It's stupid and it doesn't make sense. And it's amazing.
Do you know what kind of sucks and I kind of regret it? I wasn't in Philly the day that that Biden won. I was in New York. And
oh really?
It was pretty calm. There was nothing going on. Like, I guess it was just where Times Square was. They're really, everybody was just going about their day. Nobody really. And I love New York. I intend to live in New York at some point in my life. It's a wholly different vibe. It's just kind of like and I kind of like the attitude. It's just like I don't give a fuck. I'm going to do me.
Yeah. Completely agree. It's only less than a minute.
Yeah, so Christian, I was just going to say, you want to plug anything real quick before we banana split on out?
Yeah, sure. You can follow me on all the socials. I usually say them at the end here anyway, so if I don't get them in time, who cares? Christian Rocco 41, Instagram, Real Jay Copeland on Instagram. I am now on Twitter. I'm Christian Rock 14. That's ROCC 14. Yes, it got cut off. I did it in half a minute. Go support whoever you can. Meat Canyon's a great YouTube site. Support local artists, local filmmakers. Go on to GoFundMe. Buy a t-shirt from Mr. Talbot over here.
Yes, absolutely. And while you're doing those, make sure you follow Pretentious Movie Sheet on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. We'll have a Facebook soon. I'm doing Whamageddon over on TikTok, so go check us out there. Mr. Talbot, thank you again for joining us, and thank you all so much.
Have a great time.
Oh, absolutely, us too.
Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you all for listening.
Thank you guys for having me.
We'll see you guys next week. Take care.